Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
Tony and Melissa in the morning on WICC 600, sponsored by Selco Heating and Air Conditioning.
With us here on the telephone line is Lauren Wells. She's a teacher in Stanford. She's teaching at the Dolan Middle School, and we're very happy to have her here with us this morning. Lauren, how are you?
I'm well, yourself?
I'm well, too. So is Melissa. So happy to have you here this morning. Now, we understand Stanford is offering a grab-and-go lunch during the district shutdown. How exactly does that work for students?
I know at Dolan what they're doing is they have our paraeducators have come in to distribute those. So they have them set up right in our lobby, and they have got tables, and, you know, they're all, you know, protected, wearing their gloves and everything, and the parents, and actually you don't have to be a Dolan student to come to Dolan. You can go to any of the schools that are offering that if you are under 18 and go, just literally they buzz you in the door, you go inside, say how many lunches you need for that day, and off you go, which I think is great.
Who's putting these lunches together, Lauren?
It's Chartwell. So it's the company that provides all our school lunches and breakfast throughout the school year.
Wow.
So the cafeteria workers are there preparing all the bag lunches for all the kids. And, you know, yesterday I was in the building for doing a couple things, and I saw the ladies bringing up all the, you know, carts of lunches up to the front lobby to get ready for people to start coming.
Wow, that's really – so why, in your professional opinion, is it so crucial that these kids – have the food? You know, I would think it's really difficult for some kids to even get breakfast and lunch daily. We see that over the summertime, and now with districts closed, this is pretty tough.
It really is. And I think it's wonderful that Stanford is doing that, because this wasn't a planned time. So I think during the summer, you know, kids might be in some of the local camps and they're getting food that way, where this was just like all of a sudden, okay, no school now, tomorrow until whenever, kind of thing. So this provided families with the ability to still have at least a hearty lunch for their kids every day. And like I said, it doesn't matter. You don't have to go to your district school to pick that up. You can go to any school that's providing it and grab it.
Okay, we're talking with Lauren Wells. She's a teacher in Stanford, teaching at the Dolan Middle School. Now, is there a place parents can go to find locations and times for these lunches?
Absolutely. It's all on the Stanford Public Schools website. It tells you exactly which schools are open for the grab and go. I do know that because Westover is closed, so in that area, they have a bus that will come and provide those lunches. I'm pretty sure there's one down at the bottom on Stillwater, and then one over up at the top, closer to Miana Lane, that is providing lunches every day for that neighborhood, because they can't go down to Westover where they probably would have been open for the grab and go lunch service.
How does this work? I mean, do the kids come in with an ID to prove that they go to this school, or to prove that they're a Stanford resident, or is this pretty much on the honor system? Can any kid just come in and grab a lunch?
Any kid, you know, under the age 18 is allowed to go grab a lunch. I don't believe they're checking IDs. And it doesn't matter, like I said, if that's your school or not. I don't think there's a list of kids that they're doing. We're just really trying to, you know, help feed any of those kids that are out there that would have been getting their lunch through school. And technically, you know, I don't think they're checking for like residency or anything like that. So if you're aware of it, you know, and you need your lunch, you are able to go there, you know, and just get it, which I think is fantastic. And it's a nice balanced lunch. I saw one of the somebody having one the other day, and it was a nice sandwich. I think it was a turkey and cheese sandwich on a soft roll. There's always a piece of fruit. I'm sure there's either like a yogurt or a cheese stick kind of thing. And I don't know if they're putting a milk in there or not. I know that like when we have like a bag lunch, like if the kids go on a field trip, there's always like something to drink too. So there very well may be a milk in there. I just didn't happen to see the entire bag in there.
Yeah, but that's pretty good. I mean, I think it's great that they've got this. And it sounds like what Stanford's doing, Lauren, is actually very similar. It's kind of a combination of what Bridgeport's doing and also Norwalk with kind of the delivery mm-hmm. service and everything. So I love this. Before we let you go, Lauren, I just wanted to ask you it's not related to the lunches, but we learned yesterday late in the day that all public schools in Connecticut may very well shut down for the remainder of the semester, which I'm sure educators have kind of been possibly anticipating. There was a letter that was sent out by the state education commissioner, and he kind of insinuated that because of the changes in the CDC guidance, we may be seeing that long-term cancellation of classes. So, first of all, how is it going so far with the online courses, and what does that kind of look like? I mean, that's 3.5 months for most public schools that they're going to be doing this online training with their kids.
I know. It's really hard. I mean, it's doable, but the hard part is not seeing the kids every day and not being able to deliver the instruction right there in person and be able to kind of field those questions. And some kids aren't going to ask the questions, you know, and send you a message where, you know, if we're in class, I can see the questions on their face and say, okay, so kind of what's going on there? What can I help with? I'll rephrase it or reframe it for them. So this doesn't allow me to do that. So that part's hard for me as an educator. You know, putting up plans and things like that, that's not a super, super tricky thing. You know, I've worked my way through Google Classroom and, you know, as, you know, all my colleagues have. Some are more familiar with it than others. I'm really just kind of learning it, so to speak, and trying to figure out how I can accommodate the plans that I've put together for my kids and putting in something that I can, you know, see and grade and make sure that they're, you know, keeping up with stuff. But all in all, I have to say, I think it's going really well. At my son's school, he's in fifth grade at Toquam, and his teacher is fantastic. I mean, she sends them an itinerary every day of, okay, so from, you know, 9 o'clock to 9:30, I want you to read. Then later in the day, they have to put up something, and then they have to put in on their reading blog, put that in. And then from a certain time to a certain time, they have social studies. So she has like blocks of time with her assignment so that kids keep a little bit of the structure. And for Sean, that's amazing. He is thriving on that right now. So I think for like an elementary school, like having an agenda and what you should be doing and when you should be doing it is fantastic. For middle school, for me, it's a little harder because I only teach one subject. So I have to, you know, kind of structure it. So, you know, they're also able to do my work plus, you know, their science, their social studies, their PE, you know. But I have to say, all in all, so far, I think there's been a pretty positive response from parents and the educator side. I think some of the educators, there's a little bit more of a learning curve, but I think we're all finding
kind
our way.
Kind of figuring it out together.
Yeah, exactly. And like, if I have a question, you know, I have a few people that I go to, I'm like, okay, so how do I do this? Or how can I put this up? Or, you know, they'll say, okay, well, why don't you try this? And I'm like, oh, great. So it's kind of working, you know, where we're, you know, collaborating. Not that we don't collaborate all the time, but I think it's a different kind of collaboration, which is, I have to say, it's been working well for myself and the colleagues that, you know, I've spoken to. I can't speak for everybody. And I can say as a parent, it's working very well for my son.
Well, Lauren, let's hope that all of this is temporary and you'll be back on the job in person. Because, listening to you speak, it sounds like it's working out for you. But is there any substitute for that hands-on approach? It's like you can see the questions on their face when they're in the room with you. Mm-hmm. You can tell when a student is zoning out. How many times did mm-hmm. my math teacher go, Tony, pay attention? You know,
how many times has that happened in this room?
How many? You know, it's just the way that it goes.
Right.
But if they're home and you're teaching them via telephone hookup or television hookup, it's hard to get that mm-hmm. that sense.
It is.
You know,
it is. And the other thing that's hard is, we still have, you know, parents that are, you know, hourly workers, and they have to go to work right mm-hmm. now because right now they still have a job. And so there's not necessarily somebody there to wake them up or to say, you know, don't you have to do an assignment?
Yeah. Right.
Don't you have
yeah.
to do, or don't
yep.
you have mm-hmm. reading to do? So we are actually following up with parents ourselves. Like if we've noticed that, you know, certain kids haven't turned in assignments, that we're contacting parents and saying, you know, we just want to let you know that, you know, so-and-so, they've not done something, you know, and just trying to figure out, is it because they don't have a device because they didn't think to ask to take one home from school before we left? Or is it that, you know, they don't understand it? So we're trying to figure those things out.
Jeez.
And so hopefully, you know, as we move God. A little further along, we'll kind of iron those out.
Yeah.
And I do have to say, Altice has been great. They actually put out a free wireless hotspot.
I saw that because News 12 is now, if you're not even a cable or you're not a Altice member, you can watch News 12 now, Tone, even if you don't have you don't have access to it. So yeah,
nice.
Altice has been doing the public Wi-Fi, different you know phone companies doing the same thing. So yeah, I know that's been really helpful too, Lauren. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, but thank you much for giving us all this insight. We really appreciate it, and good luck. Man, good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, I wish I had you as a teacher when I was growing up. My God. All right, Lauren, thank you so very, very much. We've got on the line here Maureen Hanley. She's the owner of The Smithy in Monroe, a fine, fine restaurant. And she's here to talk a little bit about what's going on here with the coronavirus and how it's affecting the restaurant business. Welcome, Maureen. How are you?
As well as can be expected.
I guess that was a stupid question. Yeah, I know. Now, the governor has shut down restaurants during the coronavirus outbreak. How is this impacting your business? I know that sounds like a stupid question, but tell us what's going on there.
It's been a little surreal. You know, we've been operating for 47 years, you know, continuously. We've only closed due to power outages and blizzards. So this is certainly something different. You know, we made a commitment to the community to stay open. Obviously, we can't have the public in. So, you know, we've reinvented ourselves into a takeout line. Last night was our first night, full night of accepting takeout orders. And, you know, we're doing our best. You know, we've kept on as many of our staff as we can. And, you know, the ones that we couldn't keep on have been so incredibly understanding. You know, about, you know, the impact to our business. I mean, I would say that, you know, we've lost better than 90% of our revenue.
Wow.
That's probably being conservative.
Wow.
How many takeout orders would you say that you would do but before this even happened?
We didn't accept takeout orders.
Oh, you did?
Wow.
Oh,
so, yeah, that's a big difference.
Okay.
So, but now the only way you're getting food orders out is through takeout.
Correct. You know, on the weekends, it was standing room only. You know, we'd have, you know, a half an hour to a 45-minute wait for a table.
Wow.
You know, we've always been a sit-down restaurant. I mean, for our older patrons, you know, here and there, we've done a takeout order, you know, just, you know, because we love them. but now it's 100% takeout. And, you know, I have friends in the business, many of them weighing, you know, closing versus, you know, converting over to takeout. But at the end of the day, you know, my fiance Ron and I and our family, we just felt, you know, 47 years in business, we had to stay open. You know, we've had the support of the sellers, Frank Pellegra and Steve Cinto, who sold the business to me a short 3.5 weeks ago.
No way. Oh, my gosh, Maureen, that's wild. I was going to say, because I know the Smithy's been around, gosh, for you said 47 years. I just know I have very good friends in Monroe. That's like the only place we go to. It's amazing. But wow, you talk about being thrown into a situation. That's insane. I mean, how are you and your fiance kind of holding up 3.5 weeks into this, and now we've had to kind of turn the tables, no pun intended, and change the whole way that they do things. That's wild.
It is. You know, it's surreal has been the only word we can come up with. But, you know, I mean, I have to tell you, we have patrons calling throughout the day just to see how we are and checking in. You know, they all know that we're the new owners. We have people calling to buy gift cards just to support us, you know, and we think that we're hoping that, you know, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, even tonight, you know, we'll see a greater takeout business. But like I said, you know, we're all going through this. You know, we don't want to close. We're committed to our, you know, our patrons and our employees and our community. And at the end of the day, you know, we all feel that we're in this together. You know, we need to be kind to one another. And, you know, we'll get through this if we work together as a community.
We're talking with Maureen Hanley, and she's owner of the Smithy in Monroe. And, well, the restaurant business has really taken a hit with this whole COVID-19 thing that is going on. And you know, Maureen, you know, I know the financial thing and all of that, but I can hear it in your voice. You're very emotional for the workers and the staff, the people that have worked hard for you, the people that come in every day and make the Smithy happen. And in order for you to turn to them and say, you know, I'm sorry, I can't pay you. I can't have you here until this whole thing passes. That must have been more devastating than anything else.
Mm-hmm. It was. Honestly, it was gut-wrenching. Some of our employees have worked for us for over 25 years.
Wow.
And to have them turn around and call and be checking on us, you know, that's been emotional.
That's, yeah. Well, you can tell. And I think that a lot of people are in that same position as you are, Maureen. Now, you said that you are in touch with other owners and they're debating. I think what's great about the Smithy, unlike I think some other restaurants, unfortunately, the Smithy's been around for decades and it can, you know, it certainly will take a hit, but it, I think, will rise to the occasion when this is all said and done. In your opinion, do you find that more often than none, a lot of people are probably debating shutting down altogether because you can't make ends meet. And unfortunately, we don't know when the coronavirus is going to curb. We don't know when we're going to have this under control.
We don't. There's a tremendous amount of unknowns. You know, if we look at South Korea and China as some kind of barometer, and South Korea took steps early on like the U.S. did. So, you know, we're hoping there's a light at the end of this tunnel in, you know, 90 days or so. Our lender, Patriot Bank, is working very closely with us to, you know, try to put some kind of extension or deferment together to support the Smithy. And yes, you know, my friends who own other restaurants, we're all struggling with the same things, you know, the potential for spoilage. You know, I would rather stay open and sell our wonderful fresh food and instead of shutting our doors and letting that go to waste. One thing I would say is that, you know, I'd like to see our insurance community come together. I just spoke to my agent yesterday who told me, you know, my business interruption coverage will not cover the coronavirus. And I think lacking any kind of state or federal intervention, those restaurants of us that were prudent enough to pay for business interruption, they should, you know, put some weight on the insurance companies to cover these claims due to corona.
Yeah, well said. Well said, Maureen. You know, we're running out of time, but if people want to order gift certificates, if they want to place an order, what do they do?
They just call 203-268-4267 anytime after 4:30, and we'll be happy to accept their orders. And they can check out our restaurant at smithyrestaurantct.com. And again, that's 203-268-4267.
All right. And where exactly is the Smithy located in Monroe?
171 Main Street, Monroe, Connecticut.
Still talking about the coronavirus. And, you know, it has hit businesses very, very hard. It's hit your community very hard. But it's also hit the American Red Cross very hard. Blood supplies are dangerously short, and they need more donations more than ever. With us here on the line is Kelly Eisner, and she's with the American Red Cross. Kelly, how are you this morning? It's nice to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate the chance.
Absolutely. What are you finding with hospitals and patients in need of donations right now?
I mean, right now, what we're seeing, the American Red Cross is facing a severe blood shortage due to an unprecedented number of blood drive cancellations during this coronavirus outbreak. To give you an idea, at a national level, nearly 4,000 Red Cross blood drives have been canceled across the country.
Wow.
And those are just the ones that have been canceled due to coronavirus concerns, which has left more than 100,000 blood donations uncollected.
Oh, my God. That's significant. I mean, when you say 100,000 donations that we could have had from those events, how many people is that saving?
Well, I mean, we figure that every single blood donation can help up to 3 people. It has to do with the way that your blood is processed. Once it gets back to our lab, we separate the red blood cells so they can go to one patient. Your platelets can potentially go to another patient, and your plasma can be frozen and mixed into medicines for a third patient. So it's not an across-the-board math. It's not like I can say that was definitely 300,000 people, but it is really a good...
You're talking about
widespread.
Yeah, that's potentially, though, hundreds of thousands of people. I mean, that could, though, in theory, that could save up to 300,000 people. And now that's just not happening. That's just not an option at this point.
Exactly. It's terrifying. And it's something that I think, you know, the Red Cross completely understands people's concerns about coming out to a blood drive, which is why we're really trying to get out there and talk about how, you know, the extended safety measures that are in place at our drives and how important a blood donation is to overall preparedness and just being ready for any public health crisis.
But
a blood shortage in itself is a crisis.
But how do you get around all of this? I mean, this could go on now for another 3 or 4 months, 5 months. These blood donations, they've been canceled. So how do you get around it in order to get blood donations?
Well, I mean, if you have a good answer to that question, let me know and I'll tell my friends. Honestly, no, I mean, I don't mean to make light of the situation because that's something that we are working tirelessly to try to solve, is just getting out the message. Because, again, you know, we understand why people may be hesitant to come out. You know, you're told don't leave your house and don't do all this. But there are a couple things that, you know, first of all, I should say that all our blood drive staff are always trained in infection control and just regular safety protocols. We have done a couple more things to just step that up. When you get to a blood drive or a donation center, we're going to check your temperature before you're even allowed into the room where the blood drive itself is happening. So if it's 99.5 or above, or I guess technically 99.5 or under, you can go in. We're asking people to sanitize again before they even get into the room, and then frequently throughout the process, you know, every time there's a change, you know, sanitize. We're spacing out our beds whenever we can just to allow some social distancing even while our donors are on beds. And of course, we're disinfecting everything frequently that's been touched. We're wiping down surfaces, those kinds of things. So, I mean, these are all infection control measures.
So, Kelly, I know you're kind of overlooking a lot with the American Red Cross, specifically here in Connecticut. Do you have any idea if there are any blood drives still a go? I know you just mentioned 4,000 nationwide that have been canceled because of the coronavirus. So do you know if there are any happening that we could tell people about? Or is there a way that we can go, you know, to like a Quest Diagnostics or something and do a blood drive like at a doctor's office? Not a blood drive, but like do a donation at like a doctor's office or something. Can we do that?
At a doctor's office, it wouldn't actually get into it. It's a different process, so that wouldn't work. But the Red Cross is running blood drives every single day. And what we're trying to do is, as we hear about cancellations here in Connecticut, we're trying to find new sites. So, you know, if you have people that are listening that have access to a large site, especially, you know, something like a school gym or a big conference room where we can give, you know, we can spread out and give the beds the proper space they need, please get in touch with us, redcrossblood.org. And if you're hearing this and you really are moved to donate, again, redcrossblood.org, there's a box up in the top corner. Just put your zip code in. Normally, you know, for an interview, I would come with a list of blood drives, but because things are a little more fluid right now, I just want to make sure that people know where our website is. They can search stuff that's on there, our drives that are still on. So, you know, it's a rapidly changing situation.
All right. Hopefully this crisis will be put to bed very, very soon, and you guys will be back in business. Once again, Kelly, if people want more information, what can they do?
Redcrossblood.org. You can also follow us on Twitter. It's at RedCrossBloodCT or just CT Red Cross. That's our sort of overarching account. And then there's one specifically for biomedical. And I had some numbers just in Connecticut that were new as of 4 o'clock last night.
Share them, please.
Sure. It's 67 drives just in Connecticut that have been canceled so far just because of coronavirus, with 1,875 uncollected units, which, again, to put that in perspective, we have to collect just under 300 units in Connecticut every day just to meet up with normal hospital patients. I mean, that's a blue skies number.
So wait, what was that second number you said? 1,800 what?
1,875 uncollected units. So
wow.
That's almost 2,000 units that we would have had if not for all these cancellations.
Wow. That's rough.
Yes, it is. It really, really is. Kelly, you're doing a great job. Hopefully we can check back with you in a couple of weeks to see how you're doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
If it affects your neighborhood, they have all the info you need. Tony and Melissa in the morning. WICC 600.
All right. This morning, we are very, very honored to have Mayor Joe Ganim here twice in 1 week. And, of course, he's the Honorable Mayor of Bridgeport. And Mayor Ganim, how are you this morning? Good morning.
Well, I'm doing well. How about yourself?
We're doing okay. We're hanging in there. And yeah. I know you've been busy as a bee these last couple of weeks. We now understand St. V's has set up a testing-only center for COVID-19. Why set up the second hospital campus?
Well, first, I mean, and I appreciate you pointing that out and talk about it. I think things in Bridgeport, people are doing a very good job of trying to understand a lot of information that's coming at people and taking precautions. So I want to applaud, if you will, everyone who's kind of understanding the stress of this period of time and doing what they need to do. Yeah, the hospitals are there, and I want to—they got both hospitals now have drive-through, and this is allowing easy access, as we know, without people having to go into the hospital. My understanding is Bridgeport Hospital has seen some 40 people yesterday for testing. And they're really moving it along. I mean, they're seeing patients every 5 minutes. So another example, I think, of people coming together and getting the job done with little help from outside, our kind of ourselves here.
Yeah, and I was going to say, Mayor, that I want to reiterate again that for anybody who wants to use it, this is very much the same kind of setup as Bridgeport Hospitals, correct? I mean, it's a part of the campus, and you have to have a physician's order to get the test done, correct? It's kind of the same protocol.
Absolutely. Thanks for emphasizing that, of course. So you don't just drive in there, although, it sounds like it. It sounds like you're going to McDonald's, which is great the way they've kind of made it that way. But, no, yes, if any of us feel we have the symptoms that are anywhere aligned with what we've been hearing about in the news, primary physician. If you don't have primary physician, there are local health facilities, Optimus Southwest, both in the city of Bridgeport and others, and you call my office if you need further information. I know people, 203-576-7201. So, yeah, that's the right way to do it, so they don't get inundated. And so far, it's been running very, very smoothly.
We're speaking with Bridgeport Mayor Joe Ganim, and this is his weekly visit. Mayor, let's talk a moment about small business loans. Now, we know local businesses are feeling the crunch with closed shops and workers and not getting paid. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I got a notice did come out. It does say you can apply now up until the end of December. So that's good news. And frankly, you usually hear about a lot of stuff from higher levels of government in times like this, and nothing ever comes through, or they beat you up with paperwork and all that stuff. I don't know. I'm a big fan of small business loans, especially in cases like this. The rate of interest seems to be attractive. It was in the threes. For a business loan, likely with little, I don't even know what they require for collateral. So I think that's a good opportunity, and I'd encourage Bridgeport businesses to look at that. If you got downtime now, unfortunately, it's probably a good time to kind of pull it out, call up and all that kind of stuff and find out what you can. Again, I do want to compliment the Bridgeport businesses. This ban has made it very difficult for them. It's a state-imposed ban. But people are doing a great job with it, and hopefully we'll know more as time goes on as to how long this is going to be.
And, Mayor, I know that yesterday when we had you on the show, we made it a point to let people know that it's not really at all it comes down to your decision about DMV closing or anything like that. But Tony had a great question earlier, and I thought, well, I mean, the mayor's on. Maybe he'll have an idea because you're connected to people. Do you have any idea what would happen since DMV decided it's shutting down starting today? What does it mean for people who's, in this – I mean, we're talking about it could be shut down for the next week, the next month, the next 3 months. We don't know. If somebody's license expires in that time, what happens if they get pulled over? Have police told you what happens in that sense?
They have not. But I think what I'll do is make a good point, at least in Bridgeport. I'll check with the chief. And I think there's an understanding if you actually fall in that time frame, I think that's probably a small number of people. But the bigger thing is the inconvenience of it being closed. And we understand that maybe that has to be done now. But with an idea, with some ideas that I have not heard yet either through the office here or independently through the news, as to what are people supposed to do, the question you just asked. So that information has to get out there. I will say, though, things that I do and the city does have kind of, I don't say control over, but has to make decisions on. As we said before, for us, garbage will pick up, will continue. Bag your trash. This is for health, safety for workers and the public. But we are reopening. We shut down Monday, City of Bridgeport. We are reopening the transfer station, so that's good news. If we were going to keep it closed any longer, we would have given people some ideas. But those type of things, if we can, we wanted to reopen them as quickly as possible. We are. That's not a comment on where we are in the midst of this coronavirus. In other words, you see things opening in different countries like China because they think they've gone past the the scare period or the peak period. That we're not doing it for those reasons. We're doing that, and we'll do other city offices as we're able to ascertain the limited or health risks, and hopefully none. And that's why we would want to reopen, like let people do business, the building department, and some of those coming on quickly. And parents need to know, before I get off the call, parents need to know about the what we call distance learning or home learning through the School Board of Education. So one thing, we have charge of so many, 22,000 students, and our school district is doing a phenomenal job, and they're getting help from the state to make sure that we're able to put distance learning in place as quickly as possible. So parents will be getting information, I think, as early as today. I want to thank the school officials who came into work at the superintendent's request, because we're all in this together, getting that information out to parents. So we want our students to finish the year. We don't know what this thing's going to look like for opening schools. We want them to finish the year with the best education they can always, and then be able to go on to the next grade. I know they're talking about waiving the 180 days, but these are things people, we need to make this transition into distance learning so our students can continue to learn even at home. And hopefully we'll get some more state help with that situation. Parents are going to have to be home. They're going to be out of work. It's the end of the first week coming up in Connecticut on shutdowns, and we've heard nothing about support for parents and families, and that's somewhat frustrating.
Mayor, before we let you go, what is the overall feeling in the city? Are people dealing with this the right way? Are they keeping their spirits up? What is your feeling on all of that?
I think so. I mean, look, there's a generational thing too. I'd first start at the top, and with the greatest respect to a lot of our parents, grandparents, and elderly friends and relatives, they have to take the most precautions. Let's just reiterate that, and they need the most support. So let's continue to look at this as a threat, really. To some of us might get sick on this thing if we get it, if we're in good health and we're younger, but it's older and vulnerable members of our community, of our society in the city, that we got to kind of think twice about now as we kind of understand our own precautions about washing hands and keeping 6 or 7 feet of distance. So I kind of reiterate with that with people, but I think people are doing a great job, and we just need to get more help and more information from other levels of government all the way to the top as to how they're going to help us get through this. So, yeah, the schools are important. People are doing a good job. We're reopening the transfer station, hopefully the building department soon. Parks, some of the parks like St. Mary's in Black Rock, that's one of those where people are constantly walking and don't gather. So I'm going to talk to the administration here about possibly reopening that. We'll announce that later and other things that we can do. Not saying we're reopening everything, but we need to stabilize into what government services and things we need to put back in place. We shut everything down on Monday morning.
All right, Mayor Ganim, thank you so very much for taking the time. Oh. We have with us here on the telephone line is Lizbeth Cheruboga. Did I say that right, Lizbeth?
It's close enough. Cheruboga.
Okay. Well, anyway, she's with PETA's Teach Kind program, and she's the manager. Teach Kind is a program through PETA's educational division that's offering online options for students while districts are shut down. Now, parents should know free online educational resources, activities, and lesson plans for students of all ages are available, and this includes reading comprehension exercises for kids in grades K through 12 and dozens of writing prompts from middle and high school students. So my first question to you is, Lizbeth, how long has PETA had this program in place?
Well, Teach Kind, PETA's Humane Education Division, has been around for about 15 years now. It came online because we were receiving calls and being contacted by educators around the country looking for ways to integrate compassion for animals into their curriculum.
Okay, and this is free?
All our materials and all our services are free.
Wow. So who's putting these materials together?
Well, we're all former classroom teachers. I myself used to work in New York City schools for 12 years, and I've been with PETA now for 3 years. So we're all former classroom teachers, and so we understand the academic expectations, and we understand how schools work and what's needed. So we create lessons and activities for educators to integrate compassion for animals throughout their curriculum. And we work with teachers in schools around the country all year long.
Oh, that's very cool. Now, a question towards credit when it comes to the school curriculum. I think, we know that Governor Lamont here in Connecticut, he has waived the 180-day school requirement days for this school year, understandably so. We are anticipating districts to stay shut down for quite some time, maybe the rest of the school year. Will any of your programs, is that any credit towards what kids are missing in school right now? Or is it kind of like a bonus, like something you'd get in summer school?
Well, our lessons and activities can be fully integrated into any curriculum. So what we are offering are free online resources for parents to use at home with their children of all ages. There are dozens of free, easy-to-use lessons and activities at teachkind.org, and they'll keep students' academic skills sharp and teach them compassion for animals while they're home from school.
I love that. So this is, you said it's free and it's easy. So where can people go to find some of these lesson plans?
So all our humane education materials can be accessed at teachkind.org. And also, parents who may be working from home can also use petakids.com, and they can rest assured that it's a safe and age-appropriate website where children can learn interesting animal facts, discover easy and fun ways to help animals. Children can read comic books online, they can play games, and they can otherwise stay entertained while parents work.
Can you walk us through what this looks like? If I'm going to go on the website you just gave me and say I have a third grader or something, how do I know what's the best lesson plan for him or her? You know, how do I direct through this website? Talk us through it if we've never been on it before.
Okay, sure. Well, what I would suggest for the elementary level is to go to teachkind.org and click on our Share the World curriculum kit. Because this has a 23-minute video with inspiring animal footage, focuses on the golden rule and applying that to all living beings. And then there are reading and writing activities for the different grade levels. So it's a step-by-step guide on focuses on the golden rule, and it has reading and writing activities, and it helps parents by giving them a guide on just giving some instructions to their children and then allowing the children to work independently.
This is amazing. I love this. This is great. It's in place. And if people want to take advantage of all of this, what can they do?
Just visit teachkind.org and look through all the content in there. One other activity I'd love to highlight is our Rescue Stories comprehension worksheets, because we have that for all grade levels. And what they are student texts in different levels based on real stories about animals PETA has rescued, like Christmas, who was a rescued puppy from a remote island in the Philippines with lice and infected open wounds, like Mayflower, the turkey rescued from slaughter right before Thanksgiving. It features key vocabulary and questions that encourage literal, inferential, and evaluative thinking. So again, academic skills can stay sharp while children develop their compassion. I've always found that talking about real-life rescues really engages kids and allows them to start learning about what's really happening to animals in a gentle, age-appropriate way. Because it's also important for students to know why animals have to be rescued in the first place.
All right. Good stuff. Thank you so much. And once again, if people want more information, where do they go? What's that website?
Well, again, our materials are a win for students missing instructional time, a win for parents who may be scrambling for meaningful educational activities for their kids, and a win for animals. They can visit teachkind.org for all our free resources to keep the learning going at home, and PETA.org for more tips on how to help animals.
Hey, thank you so much for taking the time. Good luck to you, and hopefully this continues. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and stay safe.